ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
प्लीज रिपीट।
तेनास्य तादृशं राजा, तेनास्य तादृशं राजा, लिंगिनो देहसंभवम्, लिंगिनो देहसंभवम्, श्रद्धात्स्वानानुभूतोर्तो, श्रद्धात्स्वानानुभूतोर्तो, नमनः स्प्रष्टुमर्हति, नमनः स्प्रष्टुमर्हति। तेनास्य तादृशं राजा, लिंगिनो देहसंभवम्, श्राद्धात्स्वानानुभूतोर्थो, नमनः स्प्रष्टुमर्हति।
Word for word,
tenam,
therefore,
asyam,
of the living entity,
tadrisham,
like that,
rajan,
O king,
linginaham,
who has a subtle mental covering,
dehasambhavam,
produced in the previous body,
Shraddhatsva,
accept it as a fact,
Ananubhutaha,
not perceived,
Artaha,
a thing,
Na,
never,
Manaha,
in the mind,
Sprashtum,
to manifest,
Arhati,
is able. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Therefore, my dear king, the living entity who has a subtle mental covering develops all kinds of thoughts and images because of his previous body. Take this from me as certain. There is no possibility of concocting anything mentally without having perceived it in the previous body.
Please repeat.
Therefore, my dear king,
the living entity
who has a subtle mental covering
develops all kinds of thoughts
and images
because of his previous body.
Take this from me as certain.
There is no possibility
of concocting anything mentally
without having perceived it
in the previous body.
Purport.
Krishna Bahir Mukha Hanya Bhoga Vanchakari Nikatasthamaya Tare Japatiya Dhare Prima Vivarta. Actually, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the supreme enjoyer. When a living entity wants to imitate him, he is given a chance to satisfy his false desire to lord it over material nature. That is the beginning of his downfall. As long as he is within this material atmosphere, he has a subtle vehicle in the form of the mind, which is the stockpile of all kinds of material desires.
Such desires become manifest in different bodily forms. Srila Narada Muni requests the king to accept this fact from him because Narada is an authority. The conclusion is that the mind is the storehouse of our past desires, and we have this present body due to our past desires. Similarly, whatever we desire in this present body will be expressed in a future body. Thus, the mind is the source of different kinds of bodies. If the mind is purified by Krishna consciousness, one will naturally, in the future, get a body that is spiritual and full of Krishna consciousness. Such a body is our original form, as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu confirms, Jivira Swarupa Hai, Krishnir Nitya Das. Every living entity is constitutionally an eternal servant of Krishna. If a person is engaged in the devotional service of the Lord, he is to be considered a liberated soul even in this life. This is confirmed by Srila Rupa Goswami. Iha yasya harir dasye karmana manasa gira nikilasu apyavastasu jivan mukta sa uchati. One who engages in the transcendental service of the Lord in body, mind and words is to be considered liberated in all conditions of material existence. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.187. The Krishna consciousness movement is based on this principle. We must teach people to absorb themselves always in the service of the Lord, because that position is their natural position. One who is always serving the Lord is to be considered already liberated. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 14.26. Manchayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunam samati tyaitam brahma bhuyaya kalpati. One who always engages in the spiritual activities of unalloyed devotional service at once transcends the modes of material nature and is elevated to the spiritual platform. The devotee is therefore above the three modes of material nature and is even transcendental to the Brahmana platform. A Brahmana may be infected by the two baser modes, namely Rajoguna and Tamoguna. A pure devotee who is free from all material desires experienced on the mental platform and who is also free from empiric philosophical speculation or fruitive activity is always above material conditioning and is always liberated. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinataranam Paramananda Madhavam Shri Chaitanya Ishvaram. The greatest trick of the mind is to try to postpone our happiness, our liberation, our being restituted in our original position as Krishna service. The mind is always telling us tomorrow, not today. And sometimes we may even catch our mind praying to Krishna, please help me to become a pure devotee, but not right now. So that's the trick of the mind. No, we want liberation, we want to be with Krishna, we want to be free from all kinds of suffering and reinstated in our original position, but not right now. But that doesn't have to be like that. No, actually, Prabhupada is explaining here through these two verses, he's quoting, one from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and one from the Bhagavad Gita, that liberation can be achieved by the devotee instantly by being constantly engaged in devotional service. So if one is engaging his words, his mind, his work of his body in activities of Krishna consciousness, he's called a Jivan Mukta. And Bhagavad Gita says, Manchayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate. When one is serving Krishna through bhakti yoga, avyabhicharena, without deviation,
then automatically Sagunam Samati Tyaitan, the three modes of nature are transcended, Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpati, and one is situated in the Brahma Buddha stage, liberated platform. So the problem is that we have been accustomed to be conditioned, and we have been pretending for so many lifetimes that I am Indian, I am American, I am a man, I am a woman, and life after life we pretend to be something else. We identify with some personality, and based on that identification we pretend that we are something, and we play the role like in a drama, and for a whole lifetime we are playing roles. Then because of that, once Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj gave a seminar, I think the title was something like Achieving Perfection by Pretending. He was saying, since you have been pretending for so many lifetimes that I am this, I am that, so why don't we pretend now that we are pure devotees? Just pretend. No? And today I wake up and I pretend, okay, I'm a pure devotee. So what do? So I take shower, I put tilak, I dress in dhoti or sari, I go to the temple, attend mangalarati, chant japa. Throughout the day I engage in different kinds of devotional service. And like this I go on for some time pretending that I'm a pure devotee. And just by pretending like that, Krishna says, no, if you are always engaged in some kind of devotional service, then you have transcended the gunas and you are in the liberated platform. So this is a way to become imperceptibly liberated. We may not even notice, but as long as we are engaged like that, as long as we are following the program that Prabhupada has given to us, then we are acting on the liberated platform. Prabhupada says here in the purport that this is the basis of our Krishna conscious movement. So what's the basis? The basis is to create a lifestyle in which the devotees are engaged from the morning to night in different kinds of devotional service. So Prabhupada gave us that process. And anyone who is following that process can be called a pure devotee in practice. Of course, we may look in our hearts and see that we have so many material desires. Material desires are there, disturbing us, hunting us like witches, and disturbing. So that may be there, but as long as we don't invest our energy in them, we don't follow them, but we engage in devotional service, we make that choice, okay, my mind is telling me, oh, I would like to go and do that, but actually I should go and chant my japa. So let me go and chant my japa. So as long as we have the spiritual strength to do that, then we are acting as pure devotees. We may not be pure devotees in consciousness, the heart may not be fully purified yet, but in activity we are engaged as pure devotees. So that's comparable to the mango. Sometimes devotees explain that you may have a green mango or a ripe mango. It's the same thing, but one that is still green, it takes some time to become sweet. So a devotee who is not fully purified, but who is following the process of pure devotional service, which is described in Srimad Bhagavatam, which was given to us by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and by Srila Prabhupada, then it's a matter of time for one to actually become fully purified and then be actually a pure devotee in all respects. And the key to achieve that is the mind. The mind is the difficult part of the equation. Because as we have seen here in these verses, not the last few days, actually it's all about the mind. The mind has become crazy. But that's not the natural position of the mind. Kapila Deva explains in the third canto, Devanam Gunalinganam Anushravika Karmanam. There is a verse, it starts like this, and then he explains that actually the natural engagement of the mind and of the senses is to be engaged in Krishna service. That's the engagement of the mind and senses in the healthy state. So when a person brings back the mind to the natural condition, to the healthy condition, then automatically the mind will think about Krishna, will feel about Krishna, will remember Krishna, will have desire to achieve Krishna, and the senses, they follow the mind. So
that situation is better than the so-called impersonal liberation. So that's the healthy condition, and we need to go through a treatment which helps us to somehow get back to the healthy condition. So Prabhupada was very expert in doing that. Imagine that someone is an Ayurvedic doctor. Okay? He may know a lot about Ayurveda. And he decides, I want to spread this knowledge of Ayurveda throughout the whole world. And the person may decide to travel and give seminars, speaking about Ayurveda and teaching people how to treat themselves, how to be healthy. Okay, that's very nice. But there is a problem. When people just listen to some seminar, they may learn something, but most of the things they forget. And it's very limited how much they can actually absorb and how much they can apply in their lives. So that person may decide, okay, actually I should write some books. Because whoever attends my seminar, they can also get the books. And they can study further and they can apply in their lives whenever they need. They can find the answers. They may not learn everything during the seminar. The seminar will be the beginning, but then they go through the books and they learn more and they apply that. So that would be nicer, more effective than just traveling and teaching. But it's also incomplete because sometimes it's not enough to just read a book and try to treat yourself. Sometimes you need actually to go to a hospital to treat some severe conditions, some very difficult disease. So then if that person who started first giving seminars, then writing books, then he opens hospitals and he trains doctors to actually treat people, then it becomes very effective. Because even if he's not personally present in that particular place, in that particular country, but there is a hospital there, and the books are available, and there are doctors who are trained in the science of Ayurveda, and they can help people to be treated. So that would be very effective, right? So that's what Prabhupada did. Prabhupada not only he was teaching, traveling around the world and teaching Krishna consciousness, but he also wrote so many books so that we can have access to that knowledge and go very deep into the spiritual knowledge that he was presenting. And Prabhupada opened centers, temples, farm communities, gurukulas, all kinds of centers, so that people could be trained in Krishna consciousness. And after being trained, they can also help others, like doctors. So that's what Prabhupada did, and therefore it's spreading so nicely all over the world, and it's so successful in bringing so many people to Krishna consciousness. Not only bringing them, but helping them to advance in Krishna consciousness through different stages in life. So we're very fortunate to have that. And basically the whole program Prabhupada gave us is how to change our mind from the materialistic mind, which is our enemy, to the devotional, healthy mind, which is our best friend. So, it's not easy because it's very subtle. We may externally be dressing as Vaishnavas, we may externally be coming to the temple, sitting here during japa, offering obeisance to the deities. That's the first step. But then to go further and to actually engage the mind is more difficult because the mind is very subtle. And very easily the mind can run away and escape and think about other things. So to deal with the mind, it requires some expertise and some sensitivity. We have to be sensitive. It's not enough to just, we cannot push the mind, just forcing and forcing and forcing the mind to do something, because the mind may just get rebelled. In the Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto, chapter 87, there is a verse explaining how the mind is comparable to a wild horse, untamed horse. So when you're dealing with an untamed horse, it's not about strength, because the horse is at least 10 times stronger than any human being, right? So how can the human beings tame horses? By force you cannot do it. So you need some expertise. You need some sensitivity. You need some understanding of the horse, how the mind of the horse is working. Because it's a living entity, it's not a machine. A machine is very easy, no?
If you learn how to drive a car or a tractor or a tank or an airplane, then it's very easy. You press some button, you have something to drive, and it's not a big problem. It's just a technical knowledge. But when you deal with a horse, the horse has some thinking, some feeling, and some willing of his own. And unless you can relate to that, and unless you can understand the psychology of the horse, and you can deal with the horse, then you're never going to control. I was in the army for 7 years, and I was in cavalry. So I learned how to ride horses. And sometimes we would get very rebellious horses. So the first lesson you learn is what to do in case the horse rebels against you. Usually you have the reins in your hand, right? And the reins are connected to some things that go in the mouth of the horse. And when you pull the reins, then it hurts a little bit and makes the horse stop. Right? That's the system. That's the mechanism. Shri Radha Shyama Sundara Ki Jai. Shri Krishna Balaram Ki Jai. Shri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. So that's the mechanism for the horse. To stop the horse, you pull the reins. It hurts in his mouth, and then he stops. So, but sometimes the horse, sometimes you may not understand that the horse is feeling some pain. Or the horse may be feeling tired, or may feel afraid. And you keep pushing and pushing and pushing. And you want the horse to run, and you want the horse to turn this way and turn that way, and jump this obstacle, and go through the water, and go up the hill. And then at one point the horse becomes so frustrated because you're not understanding, no? Maybe it got some got hurt in the leg or something like that, and you're not noticing. So what happens at one point the horse just bites the reins and starts running and takes over the control of the whole situation. And then you try to turn this way and that way and he doesn't care. You try to stop, doesn't care. And just runs and runs and runs. Especially when it finds an open field, then he realizes, okay, I'm stronger. I'm going to bite these reins and I'm going to run. I don't care about this guy on top, sitting on my back. And then you're in trouble because he's going to run and run and run until he finds some tree or something and he's going to smash you against that. Get rid of you. So how do you do? What do you do in that situation? So we learn that you just pull with all your strength one of the sides of the rein. One side you pull, the other side you let loose. So that in that way the head of the horse goes to the side. And without realizing, the horse starts running in a circle. First it's a big circle. And gradually becomes a smaller circle and smaller and smaller and smaller. And then he stops. Right? So that's the way. In the same way, if you just try to stop the mind by force, it's very difficult. The mind is very strong and very difficult to control, like Arjuna realized when Krishna was describing the process of controlling the mind in the Bhagavad Gita. So then, a sensitive person will bring the mind gradually in a big circle of Krishna consciousness. Okay, my mind, you want to go around, you're very tired of being here, you're very bored, okay, let's go on parikram. You may go on a physical parikram or a mental parikram, but somehow you bring your mind to something which is Krishna conscious. Something that the mind can feel attracted to. Maybe what you want is just to chant and hear the holy name. That's what you want to do right now, but you realize that my mind is not cooperating. Okay, so let me think of something which at least is not grossly material. Something connected to Krishna. So you think about some devotional service that you can do. You think about the holy places that you have visited. And somehow you bring the mind in a Krishna conscious circle. And gradually you bring it in a smaller circle, and smaller circle, smaller circle, until you come to the point that you can chant and hear when the mind becomes peaceful. So you cannot just push and push and push. One experience I had when I came to Vrindavan as a new Bhakta, and I was doing Bhakti Shastri, and then I thought, no, I'm a brahmachari, I should not engage in any sense gratification, So I would just eat the food for life, khichdi twice a day, and not eat any sweets, and not because I wanted to be very austere, no? Then I was doing that for some time, and then my mind started to become very disturbed, especially when I was walking on the street, and I saw these piles of sweets, no? Peras and some papris and things like that, and I was so disturbed. And then instead of becoming peaceful in my mind, I realized that I was becoming more and more disturbed. And every time I would see some sweets, I would become extra disturbed, more than usual. So I thought something is going wrong. So I decided, okay, I cannot just push my mind like that. Let me make a deal with my mind. And I bought one box of pera. And then I had a small ditti, a small murti of Prabhupada in my room. So I offered to Prabhupada, every day I would offer two pieces to Prabhupada and eat one in the morning, one in the afternoon. And like that I was having my sweets in a regulated way, but I was not like indulging in sense gratification unrestrictedly, nor I was fully stopping the mind abruptly. So I gave some treatment to the mind and okay, now be happy, take this prasadam, be satisfied. And then I was peaceful. And then I could do the other things in a satisfied mood. So, like that, we need some sensitivity, how to deal with the mind, to what extent we can push, to what extent we can give some concession. No? But we cannot, like just like a horse, if you push too much, you lose control. And if you lose it, if you let it very loose, also you lose control. Because if the horses see, oh, this person is very, very soft, no, he's not very firm, then the horse says, okay, I don't care for this guy. So there's a balance in dealing with the mind. There's a balance to what extent I can push now, to what extent I have to give some concession. And then gradually we can push a little bit more, until we have control, and we can direct the mind the way we want. So the mind is actually very good. The mind is not the problem. But the problem is that we have been conditioned to act in a materialistic way. So that materialistic aspect of the mind, that's the problem. So the tendency of the mind, the nature of the mind is thinking, feeling, and willing. Right? So in the conditioned state, we are directing these propensities in the wrong way. We are thinking about the wrong things. We are desiring wrong things. We are feeling affection and attachment for things which are not deserving our affection. So if you can change it and redirect these propensities to Krishna, then that's fine. Then once the mind is redirected like that, then it becomes our best friend. And the whole program that Prabhupada gave us is a program to help us to engage the mind always in Krishna consciousness. And the beautiful thing about Krishna consciousness is that it is such a broad thing. It's such a Krishna consciousness encompasses everything that we can think about. So if I like music, I can be engaged in singing and dancing and hearing music, which is Krishna conscious music. If I like exercise, I can go on parikram, no? Once a day, twice a day, thrice a day. I can go around Vrindavan, I can go around Govardhan. If I like to study, if I'm intellectual, I have so much material to study. Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Chaitanya Charitamrita. If I'm artistic, I like painting, sculpture, I can engage that in Krishna consciousness. If I like to associate with people, a very social person, I can learn how to associate with devotees in a very nice way. If I like to have a family, I'm attached to the opposite sex, okay? So become a grihastha. Learn how to be a good grihastha and how to train your children nicely in Krishna consciousness. Do that. Or I don't like that, I want to be brahmachari. Yes, be a brahmachari, be fully engaged like that. So whatever your mind likes to do, whatever conditioning we have, we can learn how to dovetail in Krishna consciousness. And basically, anything we feel like doing, we can learn how to do that in a Krishna conscious way. So, it's all about learning the art of directing our mind, whatever kind of mind we may have. maybe a male mind, female mind, Western mind, Indian mind, whatever. Learn how to dovetail that in Krishna's service. Learn how to find ways to keep the mind satisfied in Krishna consciousness. And then by that higher taste, Krishna consciousness becomes very blissful and very easy. So, another point about controlling the mind, which is mentioned in the same verse that I was quoting. I was paraphrasing, no? This verse about the mind, which is similar to a horse, a wild horse. So, then the end of the verse says, therefore, a person who tries to control the mind without the guidance of a spiritual master is like a merchant which is trying to cross the ocean to sell his products without taking help of an expert helmsman, like a boat driver. Right? So that's another important aspect. We may know the philosophy, we may be willing to be devotees and try to apply in our lives, but unless we have expert guidance, it's very difficult to actually control the mind. Because the mind is so clever, it's always trying to trick us. So we need someone who is more advanced, who has experience, who has gone through the stages that we are going through now. And that person can see at what level we are. Just like a doctor. Doctor can take your pulse and can see, okay, no, this is your disease, this is the medicine you need to take. Then you take that one medicine, the doctor after some days is going to reassess you and check you and say, okay, that fever is gone, but now you have something else, now you have to take another medicine. And from time to time, the doctor has to reassess you, and because he understands the different levels, then he can guide you until you are fully healthy. So the spiritual master, he's also going to check the disciple and see what stage is this disciple. What level is he in? So maybe to this person, I have to advise him, okay, you do this. No, you get a job, you get a wife. And that other person can tell him, no, you sit and chant japa whole day. Why? Because he's seeing the stage at the devotee. And then he can advise, okay, you take this medicine. Okay, this one now you don't need anymore. Now you take that medicine. So, that's one aspect of the spiritual master. He's going to guide us step by step in different phases in our Krishna consciousness because he has gone through those phases and he can understand our situation. So, he can guide us. And another aspect is that the spiritual master, just like in the Gayatri Mantra, he is a person who is feeling bliss in Krishna consciousness. So, from him, we can imbibe the higher taste. Krishna Ananda, right? That's what we need, to be blissful in Krishna's service. So unless we have the association of the spiritual master, both the Shiksha Guru, the Diksha Guru, the Vaishnavas who are more advanced than us, so through that association we can imbibe the higher taste. And that's urgent, that's essential, that's the most important thing. Because to the extent that we develop higher taste, to that extent Krishna consciousness becomes easy, and natural, and blissful. But if you don't have that, it's very difficult. So, basically we need to have that sensitivity to deal with the mind, understanding the mind is like a wild horse. So we have to deal in that way. Not pushing too much, not letting too loose, gradually regulating it, and gradually bringing it to the point of controlling the mind. And we need the expert guidance of a spiritual master who can give us the gradual process and the medicine, the right medicine at each level of our Krishna consciousness, and who can transfer to our heart that higher taste, that blissful state of Krishna consciousness. Okay, so I'll stop at this point. If anybody wants to share some realizations or wants to ask some questions or comments, yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for a wonderful class. I have a doubt that Srila Prabhupada in 4th canto mentions the purport that devotional service is Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate even for a neophyte. So in this, the same thing you mentioned. So while okay. We are pretending to be devotees, I may be influenced by mode of ignorance, passion, goodness. But being in that, when I am engaged in devotional service, am I on the transcendental platform or still passion, ignorance?
Okay, very good question. So, this verse that we
read, Prabhupada quoted from Bhagavad Gita 14:26. At this point, Krishna is explaining that one who engages in sadhana bhakti, okay? Here, bhakti yogena sevate means sadhana bhakti. That's how the acharyas explain this verse. So, you may not be in Vishuddha sattva. You are still under the modes. But you engage 24-hour days in devotional service, sadhana bhakti. What happens? Sagunam samatiti aitam. You transcend the modes. Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. And then you become established in the Brahma Bhuta stage. That's not the end of the line. After this verse, then there is the last shloka of the chapter, which Krishna says, Brahmanohi Pratishtaham. But I am the basis of that Brahman. So don't think that coming to the Brahma Bhuta stage is the end. That's just the beginning, actually. But this is chapter 14. Krishna is just explaining about the three modes of nature. And he says, okay, the way to transcend them is to fully engage yourself throughout the day in Krishna consciousness, in the sadhana level, sadhana bhakti. Then, later on, chapter 18 of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna will pick up from that point again. In shloka 53, the last line says, again, Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. Basically, Krishna repeats that if you engage your mind, your senses, your words, everything in Krishna consciousness, what happens? Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate, you come to the Brahma Bhuta stage, okay? And what happens next? Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nashochati Nakangshati Samasarveshu Bhuteshu Madbhaktin Labhate Param. That's the next verse. Now Krishna is going to show the whole picture. So then he says, yes, from that Brahma Bhuta stage in which you become fully purified, then you can achieve Prema Bhakti. Then Parabhakti is mentioned in that verse. Madbhaktin Labhate Param. That Parama Bhakti, that Supreme Bhakti is pure devotional service at the stage of Prema. And then what happens? It's not the end yet. The next verse, 55, says, Bhaktya mam abhijanati yavan yashchasmi tatvataha tatumam tatato yatva vishate tadanantaram. At that point, after Prema Bhakti appears in the heart, then one can understand Krishna as he is. And what happens then? He can enter into the kingdom of God. Okay, so at that point, Krishna really explains the full progression until one goes back to Godhead. So, your question was, while I'm practicing, but I still feel that I'm attached to the modes of nature, is that transcendental? Well, you are not situated in Vishuddha Sattva yet. That's why you don't have Prema Bhakti. You're not back to Godhead. But you are practicing pure devotional service. So you can be considered a pure devotee on the practical level, on the practicing stage. Right? And by remaining in that for enough time, then you come to the next level, which is you get fully purified. It's a matter of time. You become fully purified. And then Prema Bhakti develops. And then you can understand Krishna. You can go back to Godhead. But you have to accept that, okay, now I am a green mango. I have to stay on the tree for some time until I become ripe. And then I am suitable to be offered to Krishna. I'm a sweet mango. Okay? So, but yeah, patience. That's one of the things that Rupa Goswami advises us, no? Have to be patient and wait until the ripe stage arrives. Is that okay for your question? Any other questions or comments? You have a question? Yeah.
Cool. Hare Krishna. Thank you for the class.
Thank you.
Prabhuji, Acharya says that we should not follow our mind.
Should not follow?
Our mind. Because our mind is our enemy. The Vaishnava song is there. Right?
I could not understand. Can you speak more slowly and...
Acharya says that we should not follow our mind.
Follow our mind, yes. Mind. We should not follow our mind.
So how we should understand?
How to understand that?
Yeah.
Okay. So the materialistic mind is
is attached to the wrong things. So only the objects are wrong. There's nothing wrong with the mind, but now the mind is directed to the wrong things. So, for example, I fall in love with someone, okay? But I cannot even see the person. What I see is the material body, and I can perceive the subtle body in the form of the personality, like that, right? So, but that matter, gross matter and subtle matter, is not worth of the love of the living entity. The only one who deserves our love and who can reciprocate with our love is Krishna. So, as long as I'm trying to invest my loving propensity in something material, then what happens? There will be no reciprocation and you feel frustration. But the moment you redirect that loving propensity to Krishna, then Krishna reciprocates and then there is full satisfaction. So, the whole thing is try to redirect the mind from matter to spirit. From Maya to Krishna. It's not like the Mayavadis or like the Buddhists who want to kill the mind. No. We have to just, the mind has got become a little bit crazy. We are identifying as a material object and you are directing the propensities of the mind to material objects. So that is wrong. So we have to redirect it to Krishna. We have to become attached to Krishna. And the thing is that this is the normal thing, it's the natural thing. Just like I mentioned Kapila Devi in the beginning. He explains that to engage in devotional service, to love Krishna, to be attached to Krishna, that's the natural position of the mind and natural engagement for the senses in the spiritual platform. So the whole process of devotional service is meant to cure the material disease and to help us to again attach our mind to Krishna. Right? So that's why you have to hear about Krishna. We have to speak about Krishna. We have to come and take darshan of Krishna. We have to listen about his pastimes. Because all this is meant to revive in our heart the remembrance of who we are and who Krishna is. Chanting the holy name. No cheto darpana marjanam. To remove the impurities of the heart. Because actually we don't need to impose any special knowledge or any is already in the heart. Jivera Sarupa Hai Krishna Nityadas. It's there already. Nobody has to teach us to be devotees. Nobody has to teach us to love Krishna. That's the natural thing. But now it's covered by piles and piles and piles of dirt. So what we have to do is through chanting, through hearing, to practicing devotional service in all different ways, no? Basically the nine processes of devotional service. We have to again revive that propensity to love Krishna. So basically remove all the dirt. And then the natural thing will be there already. And there are nine processes. If you can become attached to any one of them, no? All of them or one of them, like Shukadeva Goswami, just by becoming fully absorbed in speaking the Bhagavatam, he achieved perfection. Parikshit Maharaj, just by hearing the Bhagavatam, he achieved perfection. So if you can become fully absorbed in one thing, in devotional service, that's enough. But the thing is that we have to do it now. We cannot postpone. Like I said in the beginning, if we do that, we decide, okay, today I'm going to do this. So I do it. Right now I am engaged in giving a class. Then it's very easy to be Krishna conscious because I cannot space out. There are, I don't know how many, 100 devotees watching me. I cannot space out. I have to be speaking about Krishna, right? So that's a nice way to be Krishna conscious. But when the class is finished, I have to find something else to keep me Krishna conscious, right? And throughout the day, I have to find other things. And it's easier if you find something that you like doing. If you like study, then study. Go very deep in Prabhupada's books. If you like singing, then go very deep. Become a very expert singer. Play instruments for Krishna. Chant the holy name. Right? Whatever you like to do, you do that fully. But the thing is that you have to do it now. You cannot postpone. You do it now, and if you're doing it, as long as you're absorbed in that, then you are in the liberated stage. So the mind will be properly engaged. Is that okay? Did I answer your question? Any other comments? Anybody would like to add some experiences or realizations? Or
Okay? So thank you very much. Grantaraj Mad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shila Prabhupada ki jai.